G'day everyone, and welcome to the Baffle Days podcast. We are on number 16. Crazy times. COVID-19. It's pretty much affected every single person that we know, really, all across the world, and it's just kind of taken over, and there's been some pretty dramatic changes to all of our lives. I, for one, have lost my job. I know many people that have lost their jobs now, with the climbing gyms closing down, general healthcare kind of things being massively disrupted. And yeah, it's a pretty serious thing going on. And obviously the health of so many people is just hugely compromised by this. And there's been thousands of deaths and yeah, pretty horrifying. So I hope that everyone can stay safe in this time. Be smart. Don't do anything silly. Just keep yourself nice and healthy and, you know, observe the social distancing rules that are out there. And whichever country you're listening to this in, all the countries that I know have got their own policies in place as to how they're dealing with it. So do your best to make sure you abide by all of those rules and look after the community, because it's not just about you, it's about the community around you as well. So stay safe, everyone. On that though, we are talking about training from home. With the climbing gyms, by and large, shutting down globally, we are kind of left to our own devices as to what we have at home. Many of us don't have the luxury of a bouldering wall or climbing wall at home, although I've seen recently on Instagram that a lot of people are building their own home little walls in spare rooms or in the garage, and we've just finished building ours here in Blackheath. But yes, many people don't have that option, and all they have is perhaps a fingerboard or a portable fingerboard, some TRX strap. Many people have bought these things for the first time and don't really have much of an idea of how to go about using them, but they want to continue getting better at climbing in this time that the gyms are shut down. So in this episode, we've got Lee Cossie and Amanda Watts and myself, and we're talking about the ways that you can get the most out of not having all that much at hand. Lee Cossie, a lot of us know him by now. He was in one of our earlier episodes, but he's a physiotherapist and one of the greatest climbers in Australian climbing history. He knows what he's talking about, and he gives us some really great insight into some beginning fingerboard programming and some general strength stuff that you can do on the TRX straps or even just on the floor if you don't have TRX. And yeah, it'll help us get some, a little bit of routine in our lives and a little bit of psych, and keep us from atrophying away all the finger strength that we have, that we've built up over the last couple of years or however long you've been climbing. Could be months, but you are psyched and you want to continue getting better. We also go into a bit of stuff about how to just kind of generally get better at climbing, even though you don't have access to it. So perhaps some things that you can do technique-wise to get yourself better so that when you do get back to the wall, you kind of have everything still talking to each other. I know when I spent some time away from climbing while I was just at work and was, you know, not able to go climbing for a few weeks at a time, those first couple of sessions back just felt like my hands weren't talking to my feet. And so there's a couple of things here that we might be able to help you along the way with not having that. The training programs and exercises and tips and everything that Lee and myself and Amanda talk about in this episode, I have put into the show notes. The links are there, a breakdown of the fingerboarding stuff and the TRX exercises and all that kind of stuff is there. So no need to scribble down notes while you're listening to this. It's all there in the show notes for you. There's also the links to Lee Cossie's physio and EP, exercise physiology practice. That's the Move Clinic. And so if you want to get in contact with Lee or any of the other physios or exercise physiologists that work there, they are doing online consultations at the moment. So it's a great time if you are at home to hook up a consultation and maybe get some of those niggles looked at and perhaps even get a program if you feel like you need a little bit of direction in keeping psyched in this time. Amanda Watts, she's sports dietitian. I'm sure a lot of you are aware of this, and she runs Thrive Sports Nutrition. So if you feel like getting your health in tip-top health in this time is going to be a really big factor as well. So if you want to look after these sorts of things, get in contact with Amanda. She's also doing the online consultations at the moment. The link's there to the show notes as well. And I guess to try and help some of you perhaps create something of a training setup at home, we do have a little competition going on, a bit of a giveaway of sorts. Basically, to enter, what you need to do is send us, Baffled A's, a pic of your setup, the soundtrack you'll be listening to keep the froth going, the movies or YouTube channels that you're going to be keeping up all night watching because you're just frothing so hard, any books, magazines, or websites that you love reading to keep your motivation and connection to the climbing stuff going, and also what routes and boulders you're most psyched to get back to. And the idea of this is to try and add a bit of psych out there, and people can, we'll put all of the entries up onto the website, and people can go there and try and get a bit of their own psych, a bit of an idea of what they might do for their setup at home. And yeah, generally just kind of spread the love around a bit. Anyway, this introduction has gone on for way too long now. And guess what? The podcast, in case you haven't already noticed from the time, it's a long one as well, but there's a lot of really great information in there. Thank you so much, everyone. Remember, if you have not gotten yourself a training set up yet and you need a fingerboard or something like that, go to Awesome Woodies and you will get 15% off if you enter the discount code BAFFLEDAYS into the checkout. There's still plenty of things over there for you to get your hands on and keep you motivated, strong, and psyched through this time. Big love, everyone. Stay safe. Catch you soon. G'day and welcome to the Baffled A's podcast. We're just going to roll into this one. Today, we're talking about home training in light of current circumstances, both in Australia and globally, with the Captain Fun Wrecker 19, as I'm calling it, coronavirus. Today, we have Lee Cossey here, who's been on the podcast before, one of Australia's greatest climbers, and also a fantastic physio and climbing coach. So, g'day, Lee.
How's it going? It's good to be here, despite the times. It's really crazy. Like, I've been run off my feet the last few weeks, trying to hustle up enough work for staff and not get caught up in too much of the stress of everything. Yeah, so yeah, full on time. So yeah, hope nice to be able to sit back and have a chat about training, because I know that everyone's thinking a lot about it at the moment, stuck at home.
Yeah, it's been pretty weird times. I think Australia's on the kind of, I don't know, we've seen it go through Europe and all that just before us, so we sort of sign of things to come, and it was always going to be coming to us. And we also have Amanda Watts, who is the second half of the Baffled A's podcast, also a fantastic climber and a sport dietitian. So hello, Amanda.
Hello.
And I'm Tom O'Halloran.
Pretty exciting to be talking about training and get a bit of grounding, get our feet back on the ground, fingers back onto the fingerboard, instead of having a head full of, what did you call it?
Captain Fun Wrecker 19.
Yep.
So today's episode, we're basically just trying to give you guys and girls a bit of an idea of how you might be able to make the most of this situation in getting your climbing and general health on track while you perhaps stare down either the barrel of home isolation or even just, you know, the climbing gyms and the crags being inaccessible to us at the moment. I should mention that it is the 31st of March that we're recording this, so any kind of rules and regulations that are currently in place are as of now. So I think we're in New South Wales, and I think across the East Coast, perhaps there's now you can't leave your house without a very good excuse, which is essentially going shopping, going to the pharmacy, petrol.
You're allowed to exercise in a pair.
Yes. So, yeah, that's the stage we're at. So anything that we do say is as of now, but yeah, I guess basically we're just going to be looking at how to make the most of training with minimal equipment.
Definitely one of the conversations at the Cliff before things got more dicey and numbers were starting to get cut. People were talking about how the heck you manage to train without a climbing gym.
Can be a little bit tricky and requires a little bit of motivation, but I think we can get there. So I guess we just kind of roll straight into it with step one in having to do that is setting yourself up with some of the basic equipment and some space to make this work. So Lee, what would you reckon as like a bare bones setup?
As a setup? It's a tricky one. You know, there's going to be people out there who have everything under the sun. They have like, you know, moon boards, bouldering walls, fingerboards, campus boards, just about everything in the one shed.
Squat racks.
I'm picturing Lee Coogee's
setup. Yeah,
exactly. So there's people out there with everything, and then there'll be people who don't actually have anything. So they may not have a fingerboard, they may not have anything other than the floor. So really, you've got to just do the best you can with what you have, bearing in mind what it is that climbing requires, which is mostly a whole lot of upper body strength and finger strength. So I guess like we could touch on, you know, each of the sort of touch on each of the different kind of scenarios which people might be in. So I think probably the simplest thing to start with would be giving people advice around what could be done with no equipment at all. And I'd probably direct people to the myriad of programs that are online around just floor-based body weight strength training. Yeah, things like your squats, mobility work, you know, push-ups, simple things like that. But if we were to get to the kind of, you know, more climbing-specific stuff, I guess the fingerboard is probably the first practical point that we could probably touch on. And, you know, I know a lot of people will have fingerboards out there. So, yeah, it's probably a good place to start.
Yeah, I think it sounds like fingerboard sales globally have gone through the roof.
Absolutely, yeah. The fingerboards and toilet paper.
Yeah. There's kind of, now in the last couple of years, there's two types of fingerboards. There's the fixed ones that you get to screw onto, you know, perhaps above your door frame or something like that, or in your shed.
And then often people are mounting them to the removable pull-up bars as well. So
yeah,
the pull-up bars that attach to your architrave, they're really, really good because they're not permanent. They don't mess with your rental property if you happen to be renting. And so you can just hook a fingerboard onto that, which works quite well.
I think Emma Horan, actually, from Nomad Climbing Gym, put a little video post up about her setup. And, yeah, she did exactly that because she's in an apartment, can't add anything permanent, and managed to get a really good fingerboard set up on a removable pull-up bar.
Yeah. And I guess the other option is also the portable fingerboards that perhaps some of you have got in your crag kit. So you can string that up around maybe
a tree
branch, yeah, underneath your veranda or some rafters or something.
Absolutely.
Like that. So
even a sling on your foot. So if you're sitting flat on the ground with your legs outstretched, put a sling on your foot and then hold the fingerboard. So you can very, very easily have a proper session like that as well.
This is why we've got the man here. Those little insights. Cool. So yeah, we've got a fingerboard. In my opinion, I reckon the next thing that you'd probably want to have is something like a TRX strap.
Next
easiest, cheapest sort of thing.
Yeah, definitely. That and a pull-up bar for sure. Yeah. Something to attach it to. So for anyone who doesn't know what a TRX strap is, like, it's basically a often called suspension trainer. It works basically like a set of Roman rings that you can bring down to floor level, do a bunch of trunk strength exercises.
Yeah, it seems to be like really good body tension stuff. When I started using them, I just got totally brutalized. And
yeah
it's good, awesome full body workout in a really minimal space. And you don't need much equipment to
definitely get knackered. Yep, absolutely. And as I touched on before, the floor-based stuff, like, you know, your push-ups, handstands, planking movements, things like that, really easy to add into that. Like that, what we've just discussed there, fingerboard, TRX, and floor, you pretty much have, you know, you're 80% there to having a really, really good home session. So The way that I generally structure this stuff is not dissimilar to what you would do in a gym, like a weights gym. You basically look at each exercise as, you know, one component of the session. You would perform several sets on each exercise, and you'd select a certain number of repetitions of each exercise for each set. So basically that's a skeleton of any training program, really. How you structure it within a week, how many times you do that session, all of that sort of stuff is, you know, going to come down to what your goals are and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, basically the basics of structuring.
I think, we'll talk a bit more about applying it to your goals.
And I think probably, like, if you could throw one more extra little bit in there, probably like some free weights or something like that. They're kind of easy to come across at Big W. They're pretty cheap to get a little setup, Gumtree or something like that. I think people have been stocking up on that sort of stuff. But they're
you're
not
sort of limited
super necessary.
To maybe about a maximum of 20 kilos with those free weights, but you can still do some pretty good.
You can still do a bit
single,
of stuff.
Single arm.
No, you can definitely
one leg stuff.
Definitely worth having for sure.
So that's kind of, I guess, probably the bare bones of what we're going to be talking about, is because most people aren't going to have a campus board or a home woody or something at their place. So I guess we'll center around floor exercises, TRX type stuff, and the fingerboard. Where do we start with the fingerboard, Lee?
Okay, so I guess the fingerboard, you know, there's a lot of them out there, but basically this, what I'm going to describe, could apply to the architrave above your bathroom door, or it could apply to the most whiz-bang fingerboard in the world. Basically, we just need an edge that we can hang ourselves from. And then we're going to use, generally I would say, three different grip types. We don't want to kind of funnel ourselves into only using one grip type, partly because gripping in climbing is still, there's still a skill element to it. And we're also developing different parts of our physiology by using different grip strategies. So what I would typically encourage people to do is some sort of four-finger edge hang. So people might choose to do that in a half crimp or just a relaxed four-finger grip. A three-finger hang, because that really does load different structures than the four-finger hang. And then some sort of heavier hang. So it might be a one-arm hang on a jug, or it might be a one-arm hang on a larger edge. They're typically the three staple grips that I would use.
And just for people that have never fingerboarded before that are listening, so it's a heavier hang because you've got all of your weight going through one arm
opposed
to
exactly.
It being distributed between two hands.
Yeah, that's a really good question. So if we think about hard rock climbing can be hard because we're gripping really hard to a small hold with a lot of weight on our feet, or hard gripping can be gripping with the majority of our weight on a large hold with no feet on. So that's two very, very different tasks that are still maximal effort gripping. And so we want to practice both of those things. And so that would look like a two-arm hang on a smaller hold, or a one-arm hang on a larger hold. That's really important to cover that, the breadth of that that task.
And can I just ask a question about the grips?
Yeah.
So would you, for example, let's say you did a four-finger half crimp, then would you be on a three-finger open for your next grip?
I would, yeah. Unless it was a really particular individual, I'd be trying to aim for that diversity.
Yeah.
When we grip with four fingers, we're predominantly using one particular finger flexor muscle. And then when we're gripping with the front three fingers in a more open position, we're gripping with an actually completely different muscle predominantly.
Yep.
There's contributions by both to both grips, but, you know, we are training both. The other big thing, and this is something that we've seen a real rise in, is that for people who are gripping only in a four-finger half-crimp position, we're actually seeing more injuries when people are inevitably exposing themselves to a three-finger grip position, because they're not used to that position where we're separating the ring finger and the pinky. And we've seen loads more of those injuries in the last few years than the years preceding it.
Yeah, wow, interesting. And can I just ask also, because I throw in some pinch blocks.
Yep.
So I'm standing up, I've got a pinch block, I've got weight attached and it's single hand.
Yeah, really, really good for people who live in an area where there's a lot of pinching in their climbing. Mm-hmm. But for anyone who wants to get better at their plastic as well, we're almost always using a thumb on plastic holds.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a great, that's a great another option there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So from there, you've got your three grips. And, you know, if we were in the gym, we'd treat them as three different exercises. So we'll call one of them our bench press, one of them our lat pull down, and the other one, let's say, our pec deck. Okay. So we would perform a series of sets of hangs on, let's just start with our front three open grip. So let's say we're going to do three hangs of 10 seconds each, separated by a minute. Okay, so that would be a set of three hangs. They take 10 seconds each. Then we might choose to take a couple of minutes before moving on to the next grip, which would then be the four-finger half crimp, you know, no particular reason for the order. Okay, we'd perform another three sets separated by a minute. Then we'd take a couple of minutes, and then we'd move on to the final grip, which would be the one-arm larger hold. Okay, so that's the basics of how you would structure the fingerboarding component of a home strength session. That can change vastly. So we could perform, rather than a single hang, we might perform a set of multiple hangs with very short rests. So the classic might be a 7-second hang with a 3-second rest, repeated six times. Okay, so that's a minute of 7 seconds on, 3 seconds off. Okay, that's another really, really
doing the common one grip. So you'd doing be this, your doing three finger open, yep. 7-on-3-off, 7-on-3-off.
And we'd call times. That one set.
Yep.
As opposed to the single hang being called the set.
Yep.
Okay, and in the gym, it would be similar to performing a one repetition on an exercise versus doing six repetitions on an exercise. And there's a place for both. Generally, I would encourage people who have never had done any fingerboarding to start with that type of repeater protocol.
Yeah, any time I've had time off from the fingerboard, I tend to feel like it's just safe. It feels safer to do it 7 and 3.
It is, yeah. We don't spend as much of the time at our maximum intensity, and we can get a lot of gains because of the fatiguing element of the exercise as opposed to having to use a high level of intent and using maximum effort.
Yeah.
There in a
so it's a good way for beginners to start with a simple 7 and 3 repeater protocol.
Yep. 1 minute or six hangs would make one set. You'd have that minute, maybe 2 minutes off for an exercise like that. Repeat the same thing again on the same grip. A minute to 2 minutes off. Repeat the same thing again. You will have then done three sets on that grip. Take a short rest and then you'd move on to the second grip and do the same thing.
Can I ask you a question about that one? So why is it beneficial to do like your three finger open grip, the three sets in a row, as opposed to rotating through each grip and then rotating through each grip again?
Yeah, yeah, that's a good question and there's no perfect answer for it. I think for most people it keeps things a little bit simpler. Mm-hmm. For people who are adding weight to their or really specifically recording the performance on each of those sets, it's going to be more consistent. So, and if we repeat the same session multiple times over the course of a month or something like that, then we'd do it exactly the same way and we can keep track of progress a little bit better. But yeah, there's absolutely no harm in doing a fingerboard session as a circuit, which I would often call it. So we'd go one exercise, take a short rest, move on to the next exercise, take a short rest, move on to the next exercise. And when I'm challenging people's fitness or muscular endurance, and quite often I will set up this session like this, but rather than doing, you know, fingerboard, grip one, grip two, grip three as a circuit, I would go fingerboard, pull-ups, push-ups, maybe a lower body exercise, a pistol squat or something like that, maybe a trunk exercise on the floor as a circuit with no rest. And there they can have a really, really dense 20 minutes even and have a great impact on their climbing, especially from an endurance point of view. That doesn't work well for strength training, but it does work well for improving someone's tolerance to volume and load. And so it would actually be a great second day on strategy.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So I think that'd be kind of good to get into a little bit later on is like kind of combining all of these things together.
And it also sounds like we've got about 20 more podcasts worth of information there.
So I guess the take home there though is that, you know, for your strength training, you want to keep it simple, do one thing at a time and maximize the quality of the rest.
Mm.
The opposite end of the spectrum is work super hard and fast for a particular window of time, okay? And one is working maximum strength, the other is working our tolerance to work and effort and endurance, essentially.
Yeah.
I think the other thing that would be good to just quickly touch on is, like, there are so many different fingerboard protocols out there. Go have a look at them, but just keep it within... If you've never fingerboarded before, keep it really low, the intensity of this to begin with. Like, just be really cautious, and stuff on the fingerboard goes wrong so quickly. You can tweak out a finger, get too psyched and do something silly. So just build it up. Is there anything, any kind of rules of thumb that we can work with in terms of, like, going from zero to something?
Yeah. Look, I think there is a really, really good way to kind of simplify that caution or that guidance in that way, and that is to think about your effort on a 0 to 10 scale. So 0 is like no effort. 0 is lying on the couch or lying in bed. 10 is lifting a car off baby. Okay. What we don't need to do when we're fingerboarding to get gains is to be working at 10 out of 10. Okay.
Can we just repeat that? When you are fingerboarding, you do not want to be working at the effort of lifting a car off a baby.
No, not to begin with. But maybe through 3 years in, maybe 4 or 5 years in, and for an adult, that is really important, because for people who have hit a ceiling with their strength, the way to make progress is to do something that the body isn't used to. And those people have usually spent years and years and years trying as hard as they can on the smallest holds they can hang on to. So they need something different. But the really important thing to understand with fingerboarding, if you've never done it before, is that you only need to do something that is slightly harder than what your body is used to, and your body will conform to that. It will adapt and it will become able to do it.
Okay? Which means you're getting gains.
Which you're getting gains. And so you always want to be focusing on what is the minimum amount you can do to get gains, because that will actually result in the most gains, because you can maximize rest.
Yeah.
So if you do the least that you can do to stimulate that adaptation by your body, then spend the rest of that time until your next session resting with the high quality, you will get better quicker.
And nutrition stuff in there as well?
Be great.
So I think dehydration when you're fingerboarding is an absolute no-no. Really, really easy to get injured when you haven't been looking after yourself and drinking enough. When you're stuck at home, I know it's really tempting to just, you're either a snacker probably, or you're an anxiety don't eater like me. So if you're someone that's grazing all day and you're getting your fingerboards in, try and make sure you've got some good quality food going in around it. Make sure that you've definitely a little bit fueled going into the session. Doesn't mean that you have to go and have your like full carb snack before, like you're going to a strength session. But I would definitely put a little bit of protein, like your dinner in afterwards or your lunch in afterwards.
Yeah, especially if you're coupling it with some larger muscle strength work, which, you know, there seems to be a fair amount of research behind this idea that if you do couple some larger muscle work with something like fingerboarding, possibly looking at better gains there.
And that's because of something to do with the hormones that are released in the body at the time.
Yeah, so when we exercise, we're obviously, one of the ways in which we gain strength is obviously the release of anabolic hormones, and these are stimulated when we work really hard. But working really hard in a tiny muscle group like your forearm flexors is not going to stimulate a great deal of those anabolic hormones. So coupling some bigger muscle group exercises with the fingerboarding is probably not a bad idea, but it is icing on the cake, and sometimes we just need to focus on the cake.
Yeah. Not eating it. Not too much
delicious
of it. So one more thing I think that we need to clarify with the fingerboarding before we go into specific questions later on is warming up.
Yes,
it's funny because, certainly a couple of years ago when I started pulling onto the fingerboard more regularly, I remember texting your brother, Ben Cossey, even though I've trained a lot and fingerboard a lot, and saying, what do you do to warm up on the fingerboard, Ben? Because I find the warm up really frustrating. I just want to get to the hangs.
Yeah.
And I'm so concerned about getting an injury by not being warmed up enough that I always want to have somebody standing there just saying to me, yep, you've done enough to be warm now, you can start your session.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I've got my sort of little protocol and I tend to go for start on a 3-finger open because it feels safer than a 4-finger half crimp. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
It may differ for other people.
It can differ for other people. So, yeah, what would you say?
Look, I think there's a couple of steps and I would say becoming physically warmer. You know, actually temperature warmer is an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
We're coming into cooler weather and so it is more challenging to become hotter in your body. So we'll talk about that first of all. Now what I would typically do, because my fingerboard is under the house and it's not the same temperature as outside, but it can still be cold. So if I'm fingerboarding first thing in the morning, I will actually put on way more clothing than I need, okay, and get so that when I'm doing the first part of my warm-up, I'm actually almost feeling like I'm overheating a little bit.
Why did I never ask you about that? Okay. That's a really good tip. For someone that has Hashimoto's, an autoimmune thyroid disease, who feels cold more often than normal.
Yeah. This is coming from someone who doesn't usually feel cold. And you're always hot.
Yep. So, yeah, that's why have I not been doing that?
So when I'm at my maximum doing the hardest hangs, I want, in cold weather, I want to be in my shorts and no shirt, or my trackies and no shirt. Winter, that's what it's like under the house. And I want to get to that point. If I'm not at that point of being warm, then I'm pretty sure that I'm not going to be performing that well.
Yeah.
And I won't PB. I certainly won't be PBing that day if I'm not warm. So sometimes I will have had shorter sessions where I'm cold because I'm just doing a less important, maybe endurance fingerboard session. And I'll kind of get in and get out quite quickly, but I'm not going near those high effort levels that I was talking about earlier. So getting physically warm is the first major step. Now, the first thing that I'll actually do is do a little circuit. And so one big part of what I want to do is bring some blood into the big muscle groups, and typically that's starting from the chest out to the arms, because we're not going to warm up the hands without warmer upper arms. We're going to warm up the hands without warm forearms.
Mm.
And so we've got to kind of go step by step. And it sounds complicated, but not really.
No, it sounds really simple.
Yeah. So basically that'll be alternating between doing some push-ups and some pull-ups.
Yep.
And some, maybe some jug hangs. So where I'm hang and rest, hang, rest, hang, rest, hang, rest. So to simplify that, I would say, now, just as a little side note, the last thing you want to do going into a fingerboard session where you are wanting to perform at a high level there is you don't want to get pumped, but we want blood flow. So we're sort of balancing this out a little bit. And so the way that we avoid that is by doing very, very, very short sets of each of those little exercises. So I might pop down onto the floor and do 5 push-ups, might jump up onto a pull-up bar or the hangboard and do 5 pull-ups,
which for someone else might be 2 or 3.
Might be 2, or they might put their feet on the chair. Yeah. They might jump into it. There's lots of different options there for decreasing load.
Yeah.
I'll absolutely not shy away from doing push-ups on my knees to warm up as well, especially if it's a cold day.
We want to see that on Instagram.
Just got out of bed, like push-ups on the knees. Just, you know, get the body moving. Okay, joint movement, load on the body. These are a stimulus for increased heart rate, blood pressure, and respiratory rate. So these are really important things. We don't even need to have a metabolic load in the muscles to stimulate breath rate increase.
Awesome.
Yeah. From there, then we've basically done this circuit: push-ups, pull-ups, hangs. So it might be 3-second hang, 3 seconds off, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off, 3 seconds on, 3 seconds off. Might continue that for a minute, making sure we don't get pumped.
Mm.
Okay, and do a series of rounds or several rounds of that little circuit. And so it might start to actually become a little bit short of breath. I might start to want to take my beanie and jumper off, and that's where I would probably move on to the second phase of the warm-up, because I've become physically hot.
I've done a lot of working away, and I've been in sort of far north WA and Western Australia on a mine site, and there's nothing but the fingerboard that I've brought with me. I've got my little awesome Woody's Crag board, and that's essentially kind of, it sounds like what I was doing up there.
Minus
the beanie. Yeah, it was woefully hot.
Yeah.
At 4:30 in the morning.
Yeah. I think it was earlier, 3:30 I was getting up.
Oh, gosh.
It was just a matter of like getting myself warmed up, and it was, I'd have the board hung up of one of the chin-up bars at the outdoor gym thing. doing some chin-ups, yep. doing some push-ups, do a little jog up and down, do some squats and jumps and that kind of thing. Just anything to kind of get myself woken up
in
the morning. And also just, switched on and ready to go and engaged in what's about to happen.
Yeah. Another little thing you reminded me of then, thinking about you on a humid oil rig in the middle of like some tropical sea, was that first thing I'll do is actually chalk up. Because like, the skin coming out of bed or like even coming out home from work, like it takes time for the skin to really dry deeper down. And so, I'll chalk up and keep chalking up. Make sure that your skin's super, super dry and ready to go when you actually start pulling hard.
Yeah. I think it's also worth mentioning when you are training straight out of bed in the morning, because all of us have done that quite a lot because of our schedules and our goals around climbing. Having some carbohydrate in your body before that session or through the session helps your brain. Coffee counts if it's got some milk in it. It helps your brain to be able to focus better. Yeah. So there's lots of research around when runners just do a mouth rinse with carbohydrate, their perception of effort is lower. And when you're fingerboarding, you want your perception of effort to be as low as it can be so that you can try as hard as you can and get the biggest gains that you can. So I think, some people don't feel like eating when they get out of bed, but even if it's just a banana you nibble on through the session, or it's your coffee with milk, so you've got the carbohydrate in the milk.
Hashtag I'd marry toast.
Hashtag I'd marry toast, yeah. Tom would live on toast. I think that's worth adding.
Yeah, definitely. I would never go and do a strength session without a little snack. Yeah. But usually capitalize on the post-training opportunity to have a proper breakfast.
Yeah.
Cool. So our body is warmed up.
Body's warmed up, exactly. Yep. And from that point, we want to start to think more specifically about the smaller structures that can actually be injured in our session, okay? And so this is talking about now specifically warming up the soft tissues within the fingers. People would be familiar probably with structures like the pulleys, the flexor tendons, and other kind of more detailed structures out there as well. But basically, we want to prepare ourselves for the positions we're going to be gripping. And so if we go back to that sort of basic session that I described before, we're gripping in front three open position, okay? The bigger risk factor there is probably for the separation of the ring finger to the pinky, but that's not something we want to shy away from. It's just something we want to be deliberate about warming up. So we will want to do a few easier hangs in a front three open position so that we're actually, you know, starting to load those structures so that they're drawing in the additional basically water or liquid into the tissue, so that provides that bit of elasticity and prepares it to be able to bear load properly. And so we've also doing a half crimp position. So that's obviously a lot more load on the pulleys for anyone who's familiar with those structures. And so we want to be doing some easy half crimp hangs as well.
And easy meaning on a bigger hold.
Bigger hold.
There's more surface area.
Something that I really love is actually just leaving my feet on the ground. So actually preparing to grip the holds that I'll be training on, and I'm just starting to pull harder on them. So my feet are on the ground and I'm just there hanging, feathering the weight of my feet on the ground.
Yep.
And aiming usually to get at least 120 seconds under my belt on those holds. And that could be in 5 second blocks, it could be in 20 second blocks. Typically I'm using about 20 second super easy hangs all the while not trying to get pumped. And so it's just basically familiarizing the fingers and those soft tissues to those positions.
Yep.
And that 120 seconds, would you be doing like, you know, perhaps the first 40 seconds is, you know, quite easy, the middle 40 seconds is getting a bit harder? Is that progressing through that time?
It probably is, but I'm not worrying too much about it. I think the main thing is people are ensure that they're getting warm, they got blood right through their hands and into their, basically into the ends of their hands. The hands feel hot, or at least close to that. And then they're starting to then put the structures under some progressive load.
Yep.
So in an ideal world, maybe you would progress it up, but it's probably not the most important thing. Just do some easy stuff in the position you're going to be hanging.
Yep. Cool.
Keep it simple.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A good rule of thumb I find for when I feel like I'm ready to kind of go for it on the fingerboard is do I feel like I could pull on to, you know, my max bouldering project and feel ready to go? Like, you can kind of get a sense of like, I'm ready to go.
Yeah, you don't want to be ready to climb your warm up or your second warm up. It's like, want to be ready to go your project.
Yeah, and so that's kind of, it can take a little bit of self-awareness to try and work that out, but we've got time to work out self-awareness while we're locked down.
Definitely, and I think it's a really valuable thing. If people don't feel like they can trust their own sense of what their body is doing, that's something you need to work on.
Yeah,
we need to be able to ask your hands, like, or, you know, feel, go, oh, they don't feel quite ready, or does, or feel a bit stiff, like, I'm going to just hold this crimp position a little bit longer, or I'm going to hold this open to position a little bit more. And that's what you'll see a lot of people doing at the cliffs these days with their portable boards, is that before they have their red point go, they're not training, they're warming up, they're listening to their body, and they're actually feeling, now I feel ready to go. And they're taking those little steps, and they might do that 4, 5, 6 times a day before attempts on a project.
Definitely.
And that listening to yourself as well is not just for that warm-up period, but also as we get deeper into a session or deeper into a cycle, it's listening to yourself like, oh, hang on, that finger doesn't feel like it usually does. It's feeling a little bit stiff, or it's feeling a little bit kind of tweaked out or whatever. So, just listen to yourself throughout all of this and make sure you get that warm up ready to go. And I think if in doubt, do your warm up a little bit more or just make it a smaller, kind of easier session.
It's just go, I'm going to go back a notch on that effort level. And that's a really simple tool for people to think, is if they are a little bit under the weather, or if it's been a stressful day, or they're time crunched for their warm-up, or they've had more days on than they want, or anything that creates some sort of adversity, just pull the effort level back. You're still getting the bulk of that training session in, and that's what matters. You know, consistency is king.
It's like getting the kilometres of a run in still.
Exactly. Get it in. You just don't have to work as hard. Not every session has to be a PB session.
Yeah.
Not even close. Some months aren't PB months.
Some years.
Totally.
And it's something like working at 70% of your one rep max is strength work, essentially.
It depends on the population, for sure. Like, if you're untrained, you could probably work it. I don't know, horrifying, like 20% of your one rep max and get gains. But someone who's highly trained will need to work at 90%+, 95%+ if they want to see gains in that particular task. So it's person specific, but I really would stress the fact that what I mentioned earlier about, if you're new to fingerboarding, you do not need to go hard.
Be consistent
for months, and then you can experiment with some harder stuff.
Yeah, perfect.
And I think also it's worth acknowledging just the mindset side of it, because we're all in uncharted territory, like all us climbers and the whole population in the world at the moment, completely uncharted territory where our normal life's been taken away from us. So getting on the fingerboard is more than just trying to get PBs and trying to gain strength. It's about having an anchor into something that we love doing, getting to feel like a climber for that time, getting to have some time out of the chaos of the world and be a climber training.
Definitely, I read an article just last night actually about the situation in Italy. Italy is currently quite a few weeks ahead of us in the severity of their situation. They described early on, you'll want to train, you want to do all these things, but you'll get to a point where the stress that the nation is under is being too much for you to actually really feel like training is a priority for you. So we may actually find that as well, who knows. Obviously keep life in perspective, definitely. These details are details, but they don't need to be adhered to.
I mean, for me, I think Tom and I managed to get our first fingerboard sessions back in after a couple of weeks after a lot of training and a lot of climbing, and the sort of stress of everything and the chaos of everything derailed us for a couple of weeks, and then managed to get our first sessions in this week, and it felt like a bit of a mind break. Like, it felt like going into a meditation for 40 minutes from everything that's going on.
And that's a really valuable thing. It can be really grounding from a routine point of view, and for a lot of people their work has been hugely upheaved, and so finding that routine is super important at the moment.
I think on a quick side note, as this whole thing seems to be filled with, When I was at work doing, you know, massive days on mine sites and stuff like that, the last thing I felt like doing was coming home from slogging it out in the Pilbara heat and getting into a fingerboard or a strength session or something like that. And my motivation's super low.
Mm.
But my rule was always just at least do your warm up. And if you still feel unmotivated after that, call it quits. Just leave it. I never got to the end of the warm up and went, nah, screw it.
Yeah.
Because I'm suddenly engaged in the process and you're like, oh, yeah. Nah.
Yeah.
No, this is fun. This is actually something that I really enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I'd always just go, just do your warm up. If you don't feel it, don't do it.
Yeah.
But it was always just, I always just got motivated. So just definitely connect with it. If you don't feel motivated, just leave it. Do your warm up and leave it. That was my rule.
Yeah. I think that's a really, really good tool to use. And I think, like, I'm just going to jump forward because a couple of people had sent in questions today about motivation. How do you keep motivated for something that, you know, can be kind of boring or can be repetitive? How do you stay motivated if you live alone, if you don't necessarily connect with climbing on a daily basis because you've got a full-on job? Or, you know, and I can definitely relate to that. Like, it's hard to remain connected to the things that you value when you're 100% occupied by something else. And I think routine is the only solution to that. The big thing is you don't want to confuse routine with having another chore on the list to do. And so you've got to find your excitement with your training. You've got to put it in the calendar or put it in your daily diary, and it's there. It's not a daunting thing. It's just something that you get done. If it's feeling daunting, you've got to halve the volume of that to start with, because consistency is king and you need to get it done over a long period of time, even if it's half as much. So yeah, I guess, you know, that's a beautiful tool to be able to actually just go, give yourself permission to not do it, but at least ask yourself to commit to that period of warming up. And then, yeah, like you say, what you've said there is you just, you know, you're suddenly connected to it and you know why you do it, and you know, you get it done.
Yeah.
You're happier for
it. Or even if you just get, you know, one set of it done,
yep,
half the session done, yep, and then you still go to sleep that night thinking, ah, cool. Yep,
yeah.
I've made a little bit of a movement
definitely
forward.
Yeah. I think it's really important. And I think it's too easy to think about what the perfect plan looks like and how you're going to lay it out. Everyone lays things out generally in this, you know, prospective way. They're like, I'm going to do this and this and this, and then come this week, I'm going to change to this. And it looks good on paper, but if we're not flexible and if we're not willing to kind of understand that that will change, then it's hard not to see our shortcomings in relation to that plan as failures. And we don't want to see our climbing like that. It doesn't get us anywhere. Climbing needs to be something that we feel like we're succeeding with. And if we're not succeeding, then we need to change our approach to it a little.
Yeah, yeah. That's perfect. Let's have a look at the TRX and kind of floor-based exercises now, because I think...
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of overlap.
Yeah, the two of them kind of lend each other.
Definitely. And, you know, when I've prescribed those types of exercises to people, quite often, you know, someone may have a TRX set up or they may not. You can almost always do the same exercises without them some way or another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think... my experience of the TRX stuff is that it's kind of this full body in one go kind of exercise. Like if it's your core connecting to your arms or it's your core connecting to your feet or your lower limbs, I've found a lot of gain just overall strength in
definitely
that. So where do we kind of start with those sorts of exercises?
Yeah, well, I think you kind of touched on the concept really well, and that is that, like, you know, for anyone who's not familiar with the TRX, just imagine a set of gymnastic rings brought down to ground level quite often. Sometimes they're not. Sometimes we do exercises where they're a little higher. But basically, most TRX exercises are done with one or two points of contact on the ground and one or two points of contact on the straps themselves. So we've got these... always we're connected to the ground and to these straps, and the strap is free to move because it's swinging around, and we've got to try and control that strap with our connection to the ground. So we can we can do push-ups, we can do flies, we can be face down, we can be face up, we can have our feet in the straps and our hands on the ground, do those same sort of exercises. We can swing our legs around and get our abs pumped, all sorts of things there. But yeah, basically the situation is we're in a plank position generally, or a row position.
Yeah, so like upwards. A kind of push-up type position, or the opposite of that.
Yeah, facing really, upwards.
Facing up.
Yep. Yeah, so I guess, you know, you could experiment. You can do almost anything on those things.
Yeah. I think the straps that we got them for $20 from Big W.
Kmart's got them for $20 at the moment. They can attach over your door.
You can.
So there's a chock that you close the door and the chock stays on one side of the door. The straps come through. So if you're in an apartment, you can use them.
You can get a piece of PVC pipe from the hardware store and a bit of cheap rope and wedge a towel in the door. Like, so if you throw a towel over the door, close the door. Sometimes you will need to fold the towel a little bit or tie a little knot, and then you can just hook the rope around that towel, and then you've got a TRX strap.
Made out of a rope.
A rope, a bit of PVC piping. Yeah. If you're really tough and you don't mind the pain, you can just hold onto the rope.
Yeah.
Yep. So it's super simple, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the great thing is with these is like how simple they are, how versatile they are.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah, and there's so many exercises on YouTube. The straps that we got came with this little DVD and
a exercise chart.
Yeah, great. Yeah. I guess one thing I really like to encourage people to do is to actually just play. Like bouldering, you know, and climbing is about problem solving and play and experimentation. So I think that needs to be something that we bring into our training. We call it training, but like really it should look like the challenge of climbing, which is figuring shit out. So I would say a component of your warm up, play around with it, just do some random stuff. But if we were to kind of think of it in the same way that we talked about the fingerboarding, let's talk about like, you know, three key exercises on the TRX straps that are really good, you know, fallback exercises. And that would be something like a row. I really, really like a row because, you know, a row is something where we're pulling into the body from a position where the arms are outstretched in front of the body. So it's like the opposite of a push-up, basically. And we spend a lot of time pulling when we're climbing, but most of that pulling is with our arms overhead. And it does give a few key muscles a little bit of a holiday doing pull-ups. Whereas when we're climbing, usually we're pulling the cliff from in front of us while we reach upwards. So it is really important to include a row movement in your training. And so the way that we might do this is if we've got the TRX strap hung over a door, okay, and then we've closed that door and we're making sure that we're not going to hurt ourselves, okay, we would extend the straps out so that with our feet against the door, and maybe it would start with our shins kind of, you know, vertical and our knees bent, we'd lean ourselves backwards holding onto these straps and then we'd pull up. That's essentially a row movement. Mm. Okay, if you're lucky enough to have fingerboard and you throw an eye bolt in it and you clip your straps to that, you can then suspend yourself underneath the fingerboard with the straps vertical and assume that's
more of a lying position.
Yeah, assume that same position now facing directly up to the ceiling. Mm. And you can obviously get a lot more of your body weight on your hands. You can also then extend your feet. You could extend your feet and elevate them onto a chair. Little things like that will make the task harder. Going further forward, we can take an arm off, we can do all sorts of things like that.
Add a weight onto your chest.
Yeah, but they're vest. Exactly, yeah. But they're basically progressions of the core exercise, which is a row on the TRX.
And again, if you haven't done any of that stuff before, start with body weight, keep
totally,
it simple, not too many reps.
Yeah, Google TRX row, body row, inverted row, any of those will get you to some sort of, you know, example of what to do there.
So that's exercise one would be some sort of row.
Yep.
Exercise two.
Exercise two, well, I would turn it around and I'd probably do a push-up. To begin with, I'd probably be inclined to encourage people to start just simply with their feet in the straps. Or if you've not done push-ups before, you'd find them difficult, feet are on the ground. So this is where the core, the TRX exercises cross over the floor. And so there's really anything you do on the floor, you can pretty much do on the TRX straps in that way. So push-ups is the next exercise. really important for the development of the chest, which is a really important part of our climbing sort of upper body strength. Feet in the straps, hands maybe go in the straps. We might do a wide position. We might put one foot in the air. We might resist some part of the body with an elastic band while doing that. We might take one hand off. So there's progressions to everything. And regressions, obviously, as well. So, so that would be the second exercise, a pushing movement there.
Yep. Exercise three.
It's a hard decision.
What to pick?
I think at the moment we'll focus on upper body stuff, and where we've got really, probably some of the better gains to make. And I'll probably go with something that a lot of people would be familiar with as being called I's, Y's and T's. Basically because our body assumes the shape of the letter I, the letter Y and the letter T. Okay, and this is an exercise where we're now facing... Well, let's how do we put it? So we're holding the straps.
Facing the anchor point of the strap.
Exactly, yeah. So ideally you've got a little bit of space in the room that you're in. You've walked away from the door that the straps are attached to. You're starting with your arms in front of you, so in that row position, but your body's a lot more upright now. And then you would take both arms overhead, and that would be your eye position. Okay, and so by taking the arms overhead, you will have lifted your body up a little bit toward the door. You'll come back to that start position, which is like our row, and then you'll now take your arms overhead, but rather than straight overhead, they're now 45 degrees out to the side, and you'll look like you're in a Y position. Coming back to the start position, and then you'll take your arms out to 90 degrees or horizontal, and that would be your T. So IYT really helps develop the muscles that attach the shoulder blades to the spine, but also helps it strengthen the muscles that lift the spine or extend the thoracic spine, which is a part of our physiology that doesn't get particularly well trained with a lot of our pull-up movements.
It's quite funny, a lot of people are worried about how much they're going to lose not being able to get to the cliff and the gym as much over this time. I think there's going to be a whole lot of climbing beasts that
training beasts. There's nothing that I guess supplements some of the nuances of rock climbing.
No.
But
it gives people time that at the cliff a lot.
Definitely.
To be able to work on some things.
And you don't need nuance when you're brutally strong.
No, that's true. I don't know. There's some good examples out there.
No, I climb with some people that are brutally strong.
Yeah. But across Australia, we've got such a difference in cultures in a way. You know, we've got the people who are in the cities who... might touch rock a couple of times a year, if at all. And then we've got the people, in the area that we live, which are fortunate in our eyes because we value rock climbing, but, who are out several days a week, 4 days a week, while holding down a full-time job. That would be unheard of in most other states, capitals. So, we're talking to a really diverse audience here. Mm. Crazy.
So, yeah, I think that sounds good. So, yeah, a row, a push, and eyes, wise tees.
Yep, they're a really good starting point. Like I said, there's so much you can do, and we haven't even touched on lower body or trunk exercises there.
Yeah, you can kind of do your own research there. Check out YouTube and all that sort of stuff. And
exactly. There's
plenty of help there and plenty of books as well. So,
So a question about pull-ups, because I know that over the however many years that we've climbed together, you have done nothing but hassle me about my need to do pull-ups and how beneficial they are.
Yeah.
And I agree. Yeah. And I think at one time you said to me, every time you walk past your chin-up bar in the house, do a pull-up.
there's definitely different strategies that work for different people, but at the end of the day, climbing, we do need to pull from an overhead position. And we need to be strong in that way. From a performance point of view, is massive, but then also too from an injury prevention point of view.
Yeah.
Ultimately, we're going to put ourselves in the position at some point, or even very, very frequently, where we load a single arm overhead on a very positive hold that we can take the entire body weight on, and we need to control the body weight through every link in that chain. So that is the wrist, it's the elbow, it's the shoulder, it's the thoracic spine, it's the lower back, it's all of it there. And so each of those links are vulnerable in that position. Unless we are strong in an overhead position pulling, then, you know, we are opening ourselves up for the potential for injury.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm a massive advocate for pull-ups.
And there's probably two ways to do pull-ups. There's sheer quantity, and then there's adding weight.
There's sheer weight.
A one rep max type thing.
Or taking weight off if you're a beginner and can't do pull-ups.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yep. Definitely.
Where do we kind of sit on that? Do you want to sit somewhere in the middle? I know that's a big question.
Well, no. I think it's extremely individual here. It's in individual, not even just on based on the grade that's on clients, but on actually how they perform in their shoulders. So I'll have people who climb at quite a high level who have, you know, fairly low levels of shoulder strength and who need to do really, really quite basic things. And then I'll have people who climb at a much lower level who are, you know, on the verge of doing one arm pull ups. Okay. For want of a better way to put it, but my sales pitch to people around trying to get them on board for developing strength in their shoulders, for me, I know that I'm going to safeguard them against injury, but for them, something they can get excited about is the idea of being able to perform better. And so I basically say, we are working toward doing a one-arm pull-up. You know, whether you get there or not, it doesn't really matter, but if we make headway toward that particular simple task, I know that I'm strengthening every link in that chain. And so I'm not saying, all right, go practice your one-armers, because that's not specific to an individual. But, you know, things do generally fit along that spectrum somewhere.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, maybe to answer the question, to give people some tool to go away with, though, I would say, okay, can you do a pull-up? If you say yes, okay, well then, can you do more than 10? If you can do more than 10, I would say, yes, we're going to start to add a small amount of weight. If you weigh 70 kilograms, I'm going to get you to add 5%, which is 3.5 kilograms. Can you do 10? If no, well then great. That's a pretty good training weight for someone who's not currently and recently been training them. If they can do more than 10, then we're probably going to say, okay, add another 5%. That's one side of the spectrum. If someone says, okay, no, I can't do a pull-up, then we're going to have... It's very difficult to assess someone in a simple way like that. It'd need to be done in person. But I would basically get them to, you know, simple advice would be find some means of providing assistance while you're doing those pull-ups, feet on a dining chair, for example, and just start to get repetitions under your belt. Keep the effort level low. There's no need to...
Keep the form good.
Well, yeah, that's a difficult one for people to assess themselves. Mm. But just keep the effort level low. Don't try too hard. Do a little bit a few days a week for several weeks, and then, you know, you can keep on seeing how you go with the pull-up and just basically work on that.
Yep.
But I would say anyone who takes their climbing seriously who can't do a pull-up, actually it'd be a really valuable thing to invest a little bit of money in and go and see someone who can help you with that. Because invariably you will have, if you are that person, you'll have stronger fingers than your elbows and shoulders can actually, you know, tolerate.
I think I'm a good example of that.
Someone who's climbed a long time.
I've climbed a long time. Yep. Strong
fingers.
Strong fingers can do hard roots, and my pull-ups got particularly broken after having Audrey and having some time off, and you fixed them.
Yeah, well, we just basically, looked at each component of it, bottom, middle, top, worked on the bits that were sticky, and got heaps stronger at them.
Oh my goodness, so much stronger. And now, can one arm hang a lot easier, with really good form, and can activate my shoulders. And also, I think the key thing was the reason I fixed my pull-up was because I couldn't sleep on my right shoulder without it being a bit sore.
Yeah.
And it wasn't injured, it wasn't pre-injured, but the proposition of injury was there, and I didn't want to get injured.
Yeah, and that's often the case. Pain gets people in to see me, but quite often the thing that gets people to that really much higher level relative to themselves is the prospect of those performance gains.
Mm. The performance gains were well worth
the
4 weeks it took to fix the particular thing that was wrong with my pull-up.
Yeah, even though it felt stupid.
It didn't actually. No, it felt stupid because I had Ben Cossey and Lee Cossey standing behind me watching me do pull-ups, telling me that my pull-up was broken. And
that wasn't true. We use much more sensitive language
No, they did. They were fantastic. But, you know, there's a certain level of when you've been climbing for 20-odd years, you don't want your pull-ups to be broken. You want them to be good. And but I think as a climber, it's very important to be able to take feedback about what your weaknesses are and what's not working, because definitely, that's how you get better.
Yeah. And I think a little take home on that is that we are not our performance levels, and we are not our, you know, our strength on a given day. So we don't want to identify with being a particular way. It's like every physical capacity that you have in your body is trainable.
Yeah.
It's just about finding the right stimulus. So you don't, there's no need to get down about, you know, not being super strong at a particular thing or having weaknesses in this area. Like, they're all trainable. Just recognize it, be objective,
and be excited about
it. Be excited about the
because
gains.
It's,
yeah,
it's somewhere you can actually get a really good gain.
Yeah,
it's
reinvent exciting. Your own self-identity around what you feel you're currently not, and that's where you can become a climber you aren't
yeah,
rather than just become a stronger version of yourself.
Yeah super cool,
beautiful. And we have a few weeks to explore that, maybe. Hopefully not months, with the gyms shut down and that sort of stuff. I think just a bit of a take home to put all of these little bits into a simple week. We don't need to go into crazy details here. But yeah, our fingerboarding, our floor kind of TRX strength type stuff. We don't want to be fingerboarding too many times a week, because that's going to be too much.
Yeah, so I've got a couple of people I'm working with at the moment that are fingerboarding every second day or even every day. Mm. So have you got any general rules of thumb for how that works? I mean, it's tricky because you've got beginner, middle, advanced.
And at the moment we're not doing a lot of other things. So there's a lot of people that I've worked with who are on 6 day a week programs, you know, high level people with a lot of years of training under their belt. And so those people, if, you know, if we had like one of our Olympic hopefuls at the moment who was suddenly on lockdown, can't access a climbing gym, they would be chalking up 6 days a week.
Yeah.
Maybe 5 days a week at the moment, but we would be making sure that those days look very, very different. There would be no 2 days that, there wouldn't be more than 2 days that looked much the same in a week. And so again, like, you know, thinking about the effort level in certain ways. So if we were on the fingerboard, let's say 4 days a week, we might have two where the effort level was very much focused on, you know, a short time frame, hanging something that was very hard. But we might be working at a high effort level, but not on a really small hold, maybe with a lot of repetition. And it's, so the effort level is now sort of something that's felt more as a pump than a high, you know, maximal hang. Mm. And so, yes, there is a place for, you know, working hard every day, and at the end of the day, your hand, forearm, it doesn't know whether it's gripping the rock, whether it's gripping a plastic hole, whether it's gripping the fingerboard. So if
you hear that, everybody that is panicking about not getting to the cliff, your hands don't know.
They don't have eyes. They can't see.
Yeah.
So if what you're doing on the fingerboard resembles what you would otherwise be doing in the gym or on the rock, you can actually construct a program that keeps you fit and keeps you strong. And probably the only big thing that's really going to let you down is if you let your mindset slip when you do go back to the rock and you feel out of touch in that way. But it's really, really important to know that, yeah, like, we safeguard ourselves by not repeating the same session over and over and over again and doing things that are hard in the same way every day.
Yep.
Rule of thumb, I wouldn't do the same session more than twice a week.
Yep.
I wouldn't work maximal strength in the same body part more than 2 days a week, especially if you're new to it. Those two rules can probably be applied to everything we've talked about.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So if people are strapped for ideas at the moment, they might end up coming up with two different programs, a day one and a day two program. They do day one on a Monday, day two on a Tuesday. They take a couple of days off and they repeat that again. And then you've got a four day a week training cycle where you're repeating two sessions twice each.
And I guess really a bit of maybe a doozy of a question. To to try and maintain, to just prevent losses over a period of time where you can't get to the cliff and the gyms are closed.
Yeah.
Minimum kind of requirements in a week.
You've really just got to think about what you're conditioned to. And so I would like reflect on the last few weeks that you had of normal climbing and ask yourself, like the metric that I like is the number of moves. Some people might like the number of time, the amount of time they spend climbing, but I think moves work quite well. And so for me, I would think, okay, well, I had my last normal week, I had two boulder sessions in which I tried, you know, half of a problem, you know, 20 or 30 times. So it was roughly about 5 moves, 20 times. It's a 100 move session of hard stuff. I did a bit of warm up, I did a bit of a cool down. So let's say I did 50 moves each. That's a 200 move session. I did that twice a week. It's 400 moves. I went to the crag. I went to the top of the cliff 10 times on a 50 move problem, 50 move route. So it's 500 moves, 2 days a week. So it's 1,000 easy moves a week. It's 200 hard moves a week and 200 easy moves a week on the boulder wall.
Yep.
So basically, I would like work out what you were conditioned to.
Yeah, and work backwards.
And then try and replicate that. And so if you're trying to replicate easy climbing or indoor routes on a fingerboard, it just needs to look, you know, like it does when you're on the wall. So your feet are on a chair, maybe you're reaching down, you're chalking up, you're doing different things like that. And I would only do that if you need to come out of this period and be on fire. Like you've got a trip booked and you have no time to regain fitness. Mm. My preference wouldn't be to have my feet on the chair hanging on my fingerboard. That would drive me pretty nuts for like, you know, 500 moves worth. So I would just say, suck it up. I'm going to work on strength, maximize my rest time. It'll be interesting. And when I come out of this, I'm going to do a bit of a endurance block.
Yeah.
That'd be my preference. But yeah.
I mean,
we might do like some heavy hang kind of stuff on a Monday and some sort of longer form repeated type things on a Tuesday.
Yep.
Yeah. A couple of rest days.
Yep.
Couple and of rest days, yeah.
I think for bang for your buck, if you want to kind of just smash your sessions out as well, like, you know, you throw in your rows, you push it, your TRX stuff in there as well.
Yeah. I'd probably do the strength exercise we talked about with the first fingerboard day. And if you were to do an endurance based session on a second day, then I'd probably throw in some sort of floor based trunk. Some people might call it core training.
Yeah.
But yeah, that type of work as well.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. Mobility while you're watching TV series.
Yeah.
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 While everyone's crunching binging on Netflix.
Yeah.
Start to get those splits working better.
Yeah.
Or at all.
Yeah.
And just some of the tips that I've come up with along the way of having very minimal equipment that I've had access to, filling up old milk containers.
Definitely.
That's becomes 2 kilos. Yeah. Or put in some books in a backpack and you've got yourself a weight vest.
Yeah.
Or whatever else you've got.
Also, I think it's worth just checking your weight before you start your session. Because, I mean, certainly I think it depends. Like we mentioned.
You mean your body weight?
Your body weight. Oh, yeah. Yep. Because you could have a session where you're training 4 kilos heavier because you've got lots more clothes on.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's worth, for people adding or taking away weight, it's probably an important thing to do.
Yeah.
But that probably only affects like half a point in that effort level scale.
Yeah.
And so probably, you know, wouldn't worry too much until you're at the pointier end.
Yeah, so you can make do with not much sometimes and just get creative with adding bits and pieces together. Cool, okay, I think we can kind of get into the questions now. The other night we asked anyone if they had anything that we wanted to crack into, some more specifics. So I think perhaps we did touch on this before, but maintaining a bit of psych while you're either by yourself or, you know, not got access to the things that generally make you feel pretty awesome. For me, while I was working away, some of the things that I like to do was just maybe take a guidebook away with me, get some posters for your training setup, perhaps print out some things to just put around your fingerboards.
Picture of your dream cliff that you want to go climbing at.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's important. Hey, just staying connected to what you value in that way.
Yeah. It makes you kind of get up and get the session done.
Yeah.
That sort of thing and keeps you motivated and that there is light at the end of the tunnel.
A pretty training journal always helps.
Yeah.
With or a picture of like a panda on the front or something.
Yeah, moleskin.
Set things up the way that, you know, so that it's easy, I think, is really important. I think probably a really important distinction to make is this kind of like goal orientated behavior versus process orientated behavior. And I think you need a balance. I don't think you can ever be one or the other purely. So it's like we can't just work hard for a goal, otherwise it's just going to crash and burn, even if we might achieve that, but we're probably not going to do it again. But the same is true for just living in the moment. We've got to have something driving us there. But I think it's really important to keep a little bit of both there. So it's like you've got to enjoy it as you go. You've got to be excited, but you've got to know where it is that you're going, and that'll be the thing that gets you out of bed when you don't really feel like getting up.
I think, I mean, something I do when I'm working with people with nutrition and issues around food particularly is getting them to write down why it is they want to change the way they eat. So it's like, why is it that you want to pull onto the fingerboard? And if you've got that sort of thought process written out for yourself, you know, it's about a trip, it's about connecting with climbing, feeling like you're actually doing some exercise, keeping you out of a nursing home when you're 80.
And actually write it down. Like it might feel funny, but actually write it down, because then you're actually engaging in that process. It's not just an idea in your head. You've put pen to paper. This is what I want. This is what is going to make me better.
The more anchors you've got in the ground for why it is that you want to do things in your life, the harder it is to get it derailed.
Yeah, definitely. It's really, really valuable, I think.
And I think, you know, if you had a few climbing buddies that you'd hung out with at the climbing gym or at the cliff or anything like that, I don't know, maybe you could have
a Zoom or Skype
kind of fingerboard session together, or just have a catch up and you can all sit down and, you know, chin wag in the same way. Just connect, don't disconnect from the community. Stay connected.
I feel like a dork when I post Instagram stories about me training, but it keeps me accountable, because if I've put a post up of saying hello to my fingerboard again, I feel like I'm letting my friends down if I don't then go through with the session.
Well, I think it clearly that it's a really big thing for a lot of people, that really helps them. And, you know, you've seen that in the last couple of weeks, people sharing these physical challenges, and that's a whole lot of exercise that may not have otherwise happened. And, you know, if that tool works for you, then by all means, go for it.
Cool. I think that sort of a few ideas of maintaining psych.
Anybody wants a copy of a resource that you can write that stuff down on, send us a message to Baffle Days on Instagram and I'll get one to you.
Okay, what else have we got here? Is there any there, Lee, that you did want to answer?
Oh, there's quite a lot of questions. All of them. But there was one, you know, there's quite a few cool ones. There's one particularly insightful one. This was, you know, how to go about maintaining or improving technique in climbing movement at home. I thought this is a really, really good question, because it's a hard one to answer. And I think it points to, you know, some of the things that we often neglect, which is that, you know, we work so hard at training because we know that, you know, these sort of methods are the thing that's going to make us better. But quite often the better climber is the one that does move better, that has a better ability to problem solve. But we don't yet have amazing online resources for how to train those things. And I think, I think it's a really, really valuable thing to start thinking about. It's like, okay, how do I become that better climber? And so, you know, it is difficult at the moment. We haven't got walls to move around on. We haven't got problems to solve that have been set by other people. But something that we can do, while we may not be able to practice, is we can study. And by that, I mean, you know, we've got so much media these days. We can watch a lot of different people climb. Often we can watch different people climb the same route, and we can start to get a sense of, you know, the themes within the way in which certain people move. And so, like, I'll often describe this as, you know, it being someone's movement signature. So they climb a series of moves, or a boulder, for example, with exactly the same sequence as the next person. But if you were to, you know, dress them up in some sort of suit and you couldn't identify that person, you could still identify them because of that definitely. Movement signature, yeah. right? And so these will differ for everyone, and some of the time this will be optimized for their strengths and weaknesses, their body size and things like that. But quite often, it's the movement signature is driven more by their behavioral habits than anything else. And while those behavioral habits will have driven physiological changes that make people strong in that way and good at moving in that way, quite often they're missing out on the opportunity of being able to move in a way that might be advantageous, maybe not initially, but maybe it's advantageous for their training. A classic example that I see, I'll see two really distinct polar opposites in this way, and that is that we'll have people who their default is to find two footholds and control, and to find a body position and then reach. Find a body position, reach. Always driven by this kind of idea of a stable body position. And then I'll see someone who has not got any sort of kinesthetic sense of the stability of that. What they see is the next handhold. Okay, and you can imagine they go from one position to the other, and they move dynamically between those. So these
without finding a really stable position.
No, exactly. Yep. And so these are both good strategies. We need both those tools because different moves require different strategies. But what we want is to be able to have both of those tools in our toolkit. And so this is something I would, the first exercise that I do watching people is see whether you can pick up when people are using those different strategies. And then start to, even if you've got videos of yourself, reflect on the videos that you've got and see whether you can pick up a theme, okay? Mm. If you are missing one of those tools or you find it difficult or you recognize that you've got a real preference for one of them, start to contrive your training to move differently. And this is where training becomes practice. And in most sports, they practice. They become more skillful. They're working on skills. Climbing is a skill sport, but we get hung up on the strength we need for it.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think that's probably a really important thing. So use this time to think and reflect about on training, on your movement strategies and the movement strategies of other climbers out there.
Yeah.
I think also just to add something to that, when you first start climbing, you spend a lot of time watching climbing videos because you're psyched.
Yep.
And you just absorb other people's ways of moving on rock.
Definitely, yeah.
And you also spend a lot of time visualizing until your brain gets overloaded with becoming a parent.
Yep.
And, one of the things I used to do before I went to sleep was try and visualize my project from start to finish.
Mm.
And it can actually be quite a hard thing to do.
It can be, yeah. This is something I think experienced climbers are amazing at. And they've got this... this empty framework, this 30 meter long framework in their mind, which they can place a very specific hold into any particular point on that framework and build a route sequence. And that's something that experienced climbers have developed over a long time. And I think that their brain structure will actually be changed from all of that practice.
Mm.
With the younger climbers that I work with, their ability to figure out and to remember a sequence of even 5 to 10 moves, hand and foot moves, can actually be quite challenging. And it's not, it's basically they just haven't spent the time changing their brain in that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think visualization is another really massive tool.
And I think when you get when you get back to the gym, I train with lots of different people and they're like, oh, just point the holds out. I can't be bothered remembering.
Yeah, no.
I make myself remember the problems from start to finish.
Yeah.
Stop me getting Alzheimer's maybe.
Definitely, yeah. Yep.
And also because I just think it's, when you're on a route, you need to remember the nuances of every move in a really subconscious way. So you want to practice that every chance you get.
Definitely. I do that to this day. If I'm in a room with maybe 6 to 10 kids coaching them, I'll often have a drill where they all need to make up a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll go around the room and it might only be a short problem, but I'll give myself the challenge of remembering each and every one of those kids' problems, every hand and foot move. So when we go back around and the kids actually have to start climbing them, like I'm saying, look, putting it back on them, like you can remember this, you can remember, and demonstrating that, we can teach our brains to do anything like that.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And I just a thing for myself as well, the little trim around the floor that's a great little foot edge. Yeah. Chuck your shoes on. Practice putting weight through your toes and standing on that little edge.
Mm.
You can do little things like kind of stand on that if you've got the right setup at home with your wall spacing and everything like that. Depends on how good your architect was. like kind of lean off that and catch a toe hook or catch a heel and that. Just
yeah,
novel,
up your hallway,
weird little things.
Our hallway looks like a boulder gym.
Exactly.
You know, we can like go along
puckle,
those.
Puckle.
Yeah, and you can toe catch on
that
the bathroom door.
My brother, when he had a sort of more severe finger injury when he was younger, made a footboard. And this was like a knee-high A-frame woody, two-sided slab, which he would, you know, walk around on without his hands, practicing placing his feet on smears, on edges, in little pockets.
That's something that's quite easy to knock up.
So easy. It's basically a volume. Borrow a volume from your gym.
Or go to Bunnings and get two bits of wood
and
slap them together.
And then the other thing is to, with getting better movement and technique, do a bit of mobility training. It will help you get your hips closer into the wall. It would help you do a drop knee. It will help you in more ways than you can imagine.
I remember climbing with someone recently and he said, and he will know when I say this on the podcast, I can't do that move that way that you do it because I can't drop my knee like that. Well, you now have a few months to manage to drop your knee like that.
Perfect.
There's one tiny little point that I'd like to add on to that, improving technique at home, is that just reminded me of Ben and I used to, do an exercise at the climbing gym where we would repeat the same problem, role-playing different climbers, so different famous climbers, because each of them had, of them have that movement signature, and we would even play guessing games. We were like, okay, who am I trying to be, and move in that way. You're diversifying that skill set.
So
my friends and I used to do that with cricket shots.
Okay.
Do like the Ricky Ponting drive, and he'd do this like cheeky little bat flick up and then swoop through. And
there's a classic old really old climbing comp video of Yuji Hirayama and
François Legrand.
Legrand. And they show them going through a roof.
The
so
duel.
Old school.
Totally.
And they break down.
Udo Newman, he made that film and he's still making climbing training films.
Yeah.
If you look up hashtag climbing techniques of the 21st century, it's all his stuff. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Mm.
Next question.
This was touched on a couple of times, and it was someone was sort of saying that they were about to enter a power endurance phase, but now they're obviously stuck at home. How do we actually kind of implement
that? I thought
that
was a really good question.
It is, and a few people sort of asked similar questions about stacking, sessions that demand different metabolic capacities in the same day.
Mm.
So first of all, do power endurance at home, it looks a little bit like modifying our repeater fingerboard workout, because power endurance is essentially working the local muscular endurance of our forearms and the metabolic capacity, as opposed to just the pure maximum strength of those forearm flexor muscles. And so that really depends on the protocol that you're going to use to work on power endurance. Quite often, a classic sort of thing would be our 4x4s, where we repeat four consecutive problems. Might be the same problem, might be four different problems, and then we'd take a significant rest and then repeat that another three times, so hence 4x4. So that's a pretty classic, it's got a nice ring to the name, but essentially it's sets of repetitions on a boulder with a set rest time. So we can reproduce that on the fingerboard. And so a 4x4 on the fingerboard might look something like replicating a 10-move boulder. So we would do something like 5 to 10 grips, because when we climb a 10-move boulder, we're alternating which hand we grab, so the 10 moves are actually spread between two different hands. And so each contraction of each hand is going to typically be somewhere between around about 3 and 6, 7 seconds. So that's where the original, the Beastmaker guys decided to do the 7-3 repeater protocol, because they reviewed a whole bunch of footage and decided that 7 seconds was the average contraction time. So that's the basis of that. But we can do that sort of thing. And again, I'll go simple. We'll probably do something along the lines of 2 minutes worth of 7-3 repeaters, take a significant rest, and then repeat that again. And then it will look like your 4x4 power endurance session at the gym.
Yep.
Yep.
Use the same principles to achieve any other power endurance protocol that you would have done.
Yeah, yep. I did that pretty similar thing when I was away. For an endurance style session, I would just kind of, I'd have a Swiss ball there at my feet that gave me a bit of tension yep. through my toes. Yep. And I would move that around while I was moving my hands. Definitely, and just kind yeah. of doing different things to make the stimulus
a bit more complex.
A bit more complex.
Definitely.
You could do that with a chair. You could do it just with your feet on the ground, moving them around a little bit.
And you could alternate between a hang, a pull up, a hang, a pull up, a hang, a pull up to bring it into the whole upper limb.
Yeah. So that's what I was doing, was kind of campusing around, well, not campusing, but moving my hands around, gripping hard, kind of contriving a bit of a one arm pull up type thing, crossing over myself, moving around, doing different moves. I'd start to get a bit pumped. I'd move up onto the chin up bar that my hang board was attached to, but you could just move onto a jug or something. Chill out, rest for a moment, chalk up your chalk bags on perhaps. Get fruity with it. You've got time.
Definitely.
Like just basically doing anything's going to be good.
So I've seen some of the Austrian climbers on Instagram, like Chrissy
Schranz.
Yep. You know, they're on the Austrian climbing team and they've got sort of a TRX setup, I suppose. So if you imagine like an eye bolt through something and then a piece of rope that goes through it and two handles is what it looks like. I mean, it could be two crag boards and then they're extending one arm and the rope comes through and you know, go into it like a row. And they seem to be doing that for a period of time. What do you think about that?
Look, it's great. I think you know, it's obviously a very, very safe exercise. It's not going to be specific to the finger flexors as much, but that's not, you know, the be all and end all. So we might even, like I was saying before, we might couple a some sort of gripping task for power endurance in the finger flexors, and then we might also do a similar sort of thing for the elbow flexors and the pulling muscles. So I think it's really important to match as closely as we can the, you know, the overall bodily metabolic demands of climbing to what we're trying to reproduce at home. You know, without tying ourselves in knots, you know, getting too hung up on
details. Yeah,
don't
get hung up on it.
Have a play, do what feels good, stick with it for, you know, a good 4 weeks at a time. And you decide whether you find it valuable.
Yeah, and a session done is more valuable than a session not done.
Yep,
so
exactly.
Make it fun.
Yep. Yeah, and there's no harm in experimenting. That's important.
Yep. Awesome. And in terms of stacking two different styles of sessions together,
massive fan.
So a max strength session and a power endurance type session.
Yeah.
Benefit in that, pros and cons, things to look out for.
Yeah. So there's a lot of different things to consider when structuring a weekly program for something like climbing. So, you know, I've done a lot of coaching for route climbers, and route climbing demands a broad spectrum of physical capacity. So, you know, we need to grip really hard, but we also need to be able to grip repetitively. But we also need to be able to recover on a jug with a, you know, intermittent contract relax cycle. So that's complex. But then we also need to be able to pull, and we need to be able to strong in our shoulders. We need to have good trunk strength. And so climbing is very, very complex. And so we need to be training all of those things in a week. How do we create a week where we're training each of those as best we can? Well, if we were to train one of them as best we could, we would want to maximize the rest, and then we wouldn't be able to do the other thing. So basically, climbing is always about balancing the training, the different capacities that we need for it. So essentially, I guess I'm saying that, yes, you need to train multiple things often at the same, in the same week, definitely, but then sometimes in the same day to make it work. I would just generally instruct people to stick to some sort of set of rules where they're doing the most complex and skill demanding tasks and the most power demanding tasks first, and then move toward the repetitive endurance based stuff toward the end. So if we were thinking, you know, a home strength session on the fingerboard, that would probably come first. You might do after that the upper body strength, because there's less skill, it's a little bit less specific, but it's still high strength. And then if we were to, you know, have a few hours off, do a little bit of work from home, then we might do something that's a bit more endurance based later in the day, and that might be a very, very low relative effort, you know, power endurance session on the fingerboard.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely a fan of stacking them. Is it important right now in, you know, when people are working from home, not getting out to the cliff, not traveling? Probably not the most important time, because we don't get a lot of diversity training at home. If we were doing a fingerboard at home and then a endurance session on a rope in a gym in the evening, that's perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. It's quite hard to get the endurance stuff happening just on a fingerboard. It requires a lot of hanging on in a pretty boring, static way.
So. Yeah. I'd probably just push it to a second day on thing.
Yeah.
Rather than stacking the days. Yep.
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 Yeah. I think we've kind of potentially all got a little bit of time to
move
that stuff
and
around.
And we're not trying to work around performance in competition or work around CAG performance at the moment either.
Yeah,
so it's like,
exactly.
You know, you've kind of got 2 days a week back again, which you were typically not training on, and you were also wanting a rest day before. So essentially you've turned 3 quality training days into 7.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, if there's a silver lining to all of this, it's, I mean, yeah, last year I spent an entire year training my ass off is probably the simplest way to describe it. So it was feeling fatigued every time I pulled on at the cliff. And now we're in a perfect situation where we can't go climbing. So we can make the most out of training.
Yeah. Something I guess would think also too, it's a really good time to invest in those little trouble areas. So if you do have aches and pains, or you know that there's a part of your climbing that's not particularly strong, then that's something, you know, it's a really good time to work on it.
Yeah. And there's no performance goals getting in the way that do in the year.
Yeah.
One here, how many days should I be training each week? I think that's, from my opinion, like for me, that changes throughout my year, depending on what I'm doing.
Yeah.
Sometimes I'm doing a lot, sometimes I'm doing not so much. And I think especially through this phase where we don't have the access to the climbing and we are stuck at home, there could be a tendency to overdo it.
Mm.
And my advice would be, as you've said earlier, look at what you have been doing and don't really look at crashing above that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you can only do, if you were to try and push your training at the moment, as with always, you can only ever do a small amount more than what you're habituated to. Otherwise, you start to go into that red. If you spend too long there, then basically, you know, we're risking kind of injury there.
Yeah.
I think I liked when, I mean, you and I ran a workshop recently down in Canberra, performance climbing workshop.
With Duncan. Yeah,
with Duncan. And I think were we talking about the percentage that you increase by each week?
Mm.
And I really liked having that kind of vague framework for people.
Yeah.
Because I think there's a tendency to just every week increase.
Definitely.
And so I think if you've, can you put a number on it for people?
You can put a number on it. But at the moment where everyone's training has been upturned, it's actually they're in a state of like complete novelty. And to say that, all right, you've done X volume, you've done, you know, let's say you've done 500 seconds of hanging this week, and you've done, you know, whatever,
3 hours,
three,
of
yeah, or like, you know,
200, training.
Yeah, exactly, 200 reps of certain exercises. Now, next week, you can go 5 or 10% more. Well, you haven't owned this week yet, you haven't owned this current training volume until, you know, several weeks down the track. And so you need to actually see what the fallout is, you know, 2, 3, even 4 weeks down the track from a big upheaval like this. When you're in a very, very consistent cycle and you've been doing much the same thing for, you know, several months, then you can start to stick to a rule like that.
Yeah.
But at the moment, I'd put something in place and just stick with it. Don't shock your body every week, but rather maybe look to shocking your body once a month by increasing. So we choose at certain times to load across a 4-week cycle in a progressive manner. Then sometimes we'll choose to load in a flat manner, and we're looking for response. So, you know, someone I was working with relatively recently, we had a very short time frame with which to work before a big event, and we needed to actually understand what their tolerance to training was. So it's like, okay, I'm sorry, you've got 3 months here. But we need to know how hard we can push your body. So this first 3 weeks, it's going to hurt. We're going to go up progressively. And once we hit that threshold, that's the point at which we know, okay, we actually can't go above that. And for the remainder of this 3 months, we're going to use that as our guideline. We're not going to push for more volume. I'm just going to take you to that over and over and over again.
Yep.
You know, obviously every 4 weeks or so, we'd generally have a bit of an easier week. But yeah. So yeah, volume progression and intensity progression is a challenging area. But, you know, I would say, you know, set something out for yourself. Stick with it for 4 weeks. Unless you are really starting to, you know, feel like it's too much, then obviously, you know, the writing's on the wall and pull back.
And the writing should also be in your training diary. Track it.
Yeah,
then you can see where you're at.
Definitely.
And, yeah. Excuse me. Yeah, you can just see where you're at and you can track what's going on. And it's difficult to kind of remember what happened 3 or 4 weeks ago in your training.
Yep.
Write it down. Boom, it's there. You can see the progression. You can see perhaps a regression as you're fatiguing. Note down if you're feeling a little bit tweaky or tired or whatever.
Or stressed.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
Maybe the government's announced something else and you're having you're feeling stressed by that.
Yep.
And and it's a day to go for a run instead of a day to push hard on the fingerboard.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point. That overall stress, you know, we've got a certain amount of tolerance in our lives, in our body, emotionally, and that's filled by physical stresses, it's filled by emotional stresses, it's filled by anything you can imagine. And so if it's intense in some ways, then you know we've got to back off the physical stuff. So
and I think that leads into the kind of overtraining, undertraining question that we've had as well. Just track it, listen to yourself. Less is more,
definitely. And maximizing that rest time, that's the time when you're getting stronger. And the idea that we want to do the minimum amount of effective training is a really powerful idea. How little can you do and get better? That's what you're looking for.
And I think also with the, you know, we need to do a full nutrition podcast around this, but I think if you're feeling like you're undertraining or overtraining, are you eating properly around everything that you're doing? You know, are you skipping breakfast and eating 2 pieces of toast for lunch and then trying to get a fingerboard session in and a strength session and then eating baked beans for dinner? Or are you just snacking the entire day on foods that make you feel better? And is that the thing that is making you feel crap when you go into your session in the evening? Try and get your food is an anchor. Try and get your routine set with how you eat. So a bit of protein, bit of carbohydrate at breakfast, repeat at lunch, repeat at dinner. I think when you're in lockdown and you're at home, you can skip the protein powder generally. Like, we're often using protein powder because we're racing from work to the gym. We've got to get home and prepare a meal and you can't get the protein in quickly enough after a session. But when you're training at home, you've got the time to be able to put good quality food around your sessions. And so you can skip the extra calories that you're getting from something like a protein shake.
I think that routine thing is so, so important at the moment. Like, it reminds me of some of the older people that I see who have retired. And, you know, for 6 months, even more sometimes, their life is completely and utterly upheaved because they lose that, you know, that the routine that they got from, you know, getting up, go to work, you do this, you do that, weekend comes and I catch up on this and then I have my downtime. Everything has its place. I think it's a really, really important thing, like, to actually be deliberate about bringing into your life at the moment. Even if it's involving a hell of a lot more leisure time now, still be deliberate about how you use it. If you spend your entire day on social media, it's not going to make you feel particularly good. But if you provide a window to have that and make it a really meaningful thing, then you have that. You get to have your training, you get to read a book, you get to watch some Netflix, you get to go for a run, and it's a really rich day with a lot of different, you know, valuable things in it. So bring routine into your life.
I saw somebody wrote the other day, we used to have Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the weekend. Now we have yesterday, today, and tomorrow. But what you have in yesterday, today, and tomorrow is breakfast, lunch, dinner,
toast.
Toast, bit of a snack. And I actually had a pretty cool consultation with someone.
Audrey's just filling up my cup. I've got a very dry throat.
I had a pretty cool consultation with someone this week, and one of the things that she recognised in one of the activities I made her do was that she's standing up to eat breakfast and she was standing up to eat afternoon tea, which meant that she never acknowledged that she'd eaten breakfast. Her body wasn't aware that she had actually eaten something, and so she felt like she hadn't eaten all morning. Mm. But actually, she'd had twice as much food as she would normally eat because she's preparing food for other people, yeah, and she's just grazing. Mm-hmm. And then afternoons, when she actually prepared the food, like the hummus and crackers, and put it on her plate and sat down, she portioned out what it was that she thought she wanted. She took the time for herself to actually eat it. She enjoyed the time. And then her body had an awareness of what she'd actually taken in. So yeah, really work hard, I think. Or don't work hard. Just give yourself the gift of taking the time to eat like that.
Yeah, maybe this is some time to actually set up some of those practices that you've wanted to do. Yeah. And you've just...
add in more plant-based eating.
Yeah, yeah, and little things like, you know, getting up and doing some yoga, perhaps, or reading your book a little bit more. Like, maybe use this... it's a flippin' stressful time for a lot of people. I've lost my job and we're living it, it's pretty real, but you know, it's a time to also start something new, start some new practices and make this a positive rather than just dwelling in the negative of it. I think we've pretty much covered it. It's a bit of a whopper so far.
I'm excited.
So some take homes. Yeah, get yourself a fingerboard if you can.
Or otherwise,
there's or a door frame.
9A door jam. Like, it was a blog and it's now your training device. Four finger, three finger, and some tough kind of heavy hang there.
Could just be on a jug.
Yeah. Yep. TRX straps or on the floor stuff. Rows, push ups, and eyes wise tees. Plenty of videos out there, plenty of books and that sort of thing, and some good pull-up exercises. There's so much out there in information. If you need any more information, give Baffle Days a message, and also absolutely get onto the Move Clinic.
So how do people get in contact with you, Lee?
Yeah, so people can hit us up with questions on the Move Clinic Instagram page. That's probably a really good starting point.
If people wanted to get a simple like lockdown training plan from you, is that a possibility?
Absolutely, yeah. So like my interest is in really personalizing things. So at the moment, like I'm not a massive fan of, you know, churning out a generic plan.
Yep.
You know, for a lot of people to use, but I really like sort of solving people's problems and actually assessing people's, you know, current performance level and
which
working with
totally
them.
Which is totally doable via Zoom and Skype.
Yeah, absolutely. And so we're doing online video consults at the moment, where we basically, you know, you're on your computer or mobile device, I'm on mine, and we basically stand in front of your fingerboard or pull-up bar, whatever you happen to have, and come up with something that works for you. So that's definitely an option, and that can be arranged through the Instagram page or getting in touch via our email, which is info@moveclinic.com.au.
Terrific. Yeah. And you can, if you forget all of that information, contact Baffle Days and we can put you in touch as well.
Yeah, and we'll chuck it in the show notes as well. All that information will be there. If you haven't got yourself a fingerboard yet, remember to use Baffle Days at the checkout. Awesome Woodies, you will get yourself 15% off. That's BAFFLEDAYS, Baffled Days. I think apart from that, thank you so much, Lee.
No, pleasure.
That's awesome.
If there's always keen to chat about training.
Yeah, I think we'll definitely...
I'm excited to do some more.
We'd love to crack into some more for sure.
Yeah, cool.
Yep. But hopefully there's some take-home messages for you there. Stay happy, everyone. It's a tough time. Reach out to friends if you're struggling.
Reach out to us if you need it.
Yep. Yep. Things will get better.
They have to.
See ya.
See ya.